Hello, this is Chris Safarova. Welcome to another episode of the Strategy Skills Podcast. Our podcast sponsor today is strategytraining.com. If you want to strengthen your strategy skills, you can get the overall approach used in well-managed strategy studies. It is a free download. Go to firmsconsulting.com/overall approach. Welcome to today's special episode of our podcast, where we have the pleasure of interviewing some of the most influential and successful female leaders in business, Christiane Smith-Shee and Grace Puma. Christiane is the former president of Nike's Consumer Direct Division, where she led the company's global retail and e-commerce business. Before that, she was a senior partner at McKinsey. And Grace is the former executive vice president and COO of PepsiCo, and before that held senior positions with United Airlines, Kraft Foods, Motorola, Gillette, and currently a board member of Target. Christiane and Grace, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You both have such distinguished careers. Christiane, let's start with you. You had such an incredible career so far. President of Nike's Consumer Direct Division, a $4 billion business with over 25,000 employees worldwide at the time, senior partner at McKinsey. Can you share with us some defining moments from your career so far? Some key moments that shaped your career?
Well, it's been a long career, Chris, so there's obviously a lot of key moments. I would say, along the way at McKinsey & Company, where I was for 24 years, I think the defining moments were the times when I took a chance, took a risk, and asked the partners or the firm or my teammates to meet me in making some kind of change to support my career goals or my personal goals. I don't know that I would have stayed in management consulting 24 years if I hadn't taken some of those chances. And it included asking to go part-time when there was no such approach or program. It included taking a particular focus, in my case, on retail and introducing clients that, you know, could have failed because I had to be entrepreneurial. And it included being only the 10th woman elected senior partner at McKinsey. So even sticking around and taking a chance at getting elected was a risk because so few women had done that before. All of those things paid off. And I think part of what we try to do in the book Career Forward is encourage other women to take those kind of chances. And the last, big defining risk that I took was leaving consulting after such a long career and going into industry and actually working in an operating role at a senior level. When most people would say, if you leave consulting as a senior partner, you ought to go retire on a winery or grow grapes somewhere in Napa Valley. So I think and I hope that my experience shows that you can take a lot of chances and take some smart, calculated risks and end up in exactly the right career for you.
Christiane, and I remember in the book you mentioned that during the beginning of your career, you really struggled with public speaking. Not that you struggled, but you weren't comfortable and you were able to completely overcome it. I was watching you presenting 7 years ago at a conference. You're such a dynamic speaker. Could you share a few tips on how you overcame that fear of public speaking? Because it is so relevant to many of our listeners.
Absolutely. Yes, it is. And, Grace and I say this in the book, it's very hard to imagine that you will get to a senior role in whatever your field is and not have to speak in public to large groups. And I had this anxiety about it where my throat would close up, it would get totally dry, no sound would come out. It was bad. And I actually went into therapy and talked it through with a therapist to help understand, what was driving that anxiety. And I practiced. And it's another theme that we have in the book, which is you can build skills, but you have to be intentional about it. And I worked both with McKinsey and at Nike to do media training, to get videotaped and have to watch myself play back, to practice questions and answers, to rehearse everything that I presented. And after a while, it becomes muscle memory. And you just relax into something because you have that confidence that you know you can do it. And that's what happened with me.
Videotaping yourself makes such a big difference. I remember when I was supposed to present for the first time and I made sure that I properly prepared. And the first time I videotaped myself, I noticed that I was doing something funny with my hand and I had no idea I was doing it. So it's such a powerful tip. along with all other tips that you shared. So Grace, now the same question for you. Such an incredible career so far, executive vice president and CEO of PepsiCo, and before that, senior positions with United Airlines, Kraft Foods, Motorola, Gillette, just sounds dream companies for many people, and now a board member of Target. What were some of the defining moments that shaped your career?
Yeah, so I have to say they were really, I would say, transformational moments. When I took positions or joined companies that were going through major transformations. And what that did for me is it allowed me to develop and apply my skill set at a different level than it had been before. So when you think about it, earlier in my career, leaving a very comfortable food company and moving to an airline that was in transformation was a very prominent learning experience for me and contribution. And that led to going to, for example, PepsiCo, where I transformed a very decentralized procurement organization into a global procurement organization. But there were a lot of experiences through my career where I was able to be able to raise my hand and be able to be involved in transformation or change moments for companies that I worked for. And those taught me the most. So I think those are the pivotal moments.
And in working with such a variety of different organizations, did you experience a big culture shock going from one to another?
Oh, for sure. But the way I would actually say it was actually part of the strength and the projection of my career. So what I mean by that is it really taught me early on to adapt to different cultures, learn different ways of doing things. I gained best practices in a lot of different industries, not just one. But the adaptability and the flexibility as a leader throughout my career by, in my case, being able to work in different companies, I think it was actually an additive benefit to me.
Definitely. It reminds me of when you live in different countries, you have this feeling that the world is your country. And when you work in so many different organizations, you have this kind of different mindset. It gives you an ability to see things in a different way.
It also gives you the ability to build confidence that you will figure it out in different environments. And I think that that agility is just critical today.
And I think that's a good analogy, Chris, about working in different countries and basically working in the world. Because, you know, I saw a lot of colleagues in consulting who stayed with McKinsey for a long time, but they moved around and they worked in Japan and they worked in India and they worked in Central and Eastern Europe. And in the same way that changing companies can really propel you to a whole level of growth, changing countries and cultures can do the same thing. And we're just big fans in Career Forward of continuing to grow, never resting on your laurels and always continuing to develop yourself.
It's so important because if you don't grow, you're basically going the other way because the world is going forward. You cannot just stand still. You recently co-authored a book, Career Forward. Christiane, thank you for mentioning it, the name. And I like the subtitle, Strategies from Women Who Have Made It. And it is so true. You both made it in a big way. And the launching pad for your great friendship and collaboration was you both being elected to the board of directors of a large retailer at the same time. Maybe you could tell us the founding story that led to you partnering to write this book.
Should I try that one, Grace?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. We showed up on the same day at the same place on the same board. And, you know, it was just like the first day of school. You're trying to check out the other kids and kind of get a sense of the lay of the land and what's everybody bringing to this organization, et cetera. And it didn't take long, I think, for me and Grace to recognize that we were kindred spirits. And we both bring a similar approach to things, which is, you know, pretty rational, pretty no nonsense, but also very humane and very experience based. And after being on the board for a little while, after one of the meetings, we actually went down to Fisherman's Wharf because we were in San Francisco and we had a drink. And I think it's probably the last time I had a Bellini, but I remember distinctly that both of us had Bellinis because it was summer in San Francisco. And we started talking about where we were in our careers. We were both getting toward that retirement point, and we were spending a lot of time talking to other women who are asking us for advice. And it eventually led to us deciding that it would be wonderful if we could actually codify our career advice and our learning and our lessons in something tangible that we could actually give to people to say, hey, here, here's what we think, you know, this is what we've learned through a lot of hard, you know, hard knocks and a lot of happy upsides. You know, hope it helps you too.
I think it is so important to do. And the fact that both of you partnered to write this book with your background, your achievements, the people that you are, I think that is such a gift actually. And it saves you a lot of time because now when people come to you and say, can you give us advice? You can say, start with the book.
And the other way around, you're exactly right, Chris. We both would get asked to come and speak to women's groups at the companies that we worked at our alma maters, whatever. And you talk for 30 minutes and you take questions for 30 minutes and then you're gone. And people would always reach out to us after and want more advice and want specific questions. And you can't reach out to everybody. You just don't have the scale to do that. So this allows us to also have a leave behind and say, you know, if what we said made sense today, there's more. There's a lot more in Career Forward. And the stories, by the way, of the women who made it are not just Grace and myself, although we put a lot of our own personal stories in Career Forward. We also reached out and talked to some of our close friends whose careers we admired, which covered all different fields, and asked them for their stories and for their advice.
Yeah, I think one of the nuances here that we want people to realize is one of the powers of this book with Christiana and I writing it and the other women that contributed is that you can get to your aspirations a number of different ways. Okay, everybody has their career journey, and this book walks you through how to find your career journey strategically and how to achieve it. It's not going to be the same path that I followed or that she followed, or it's going to be your own path. Yet there are some truths, and that's what we try to build into the book.
I think that one question that I hear from clients often, and often it is also unspoken, but I see that they would benefit from knowing how to do this, is finding the right career, finding a career that is actually exciting, that becomes a way to find a sense of fulfillment and purpose. What would be your advice?
I think that one of the things we talk about at the premise or the heart of the book is really taking the time to take stock and use the tools in the book to figure out what it is that you want to do and then set a path or a journey. We call it a career GPS, for example. So when you think about your true north or your cardinal direction, it's really understanding and assessing your strengths, your capabilities, your passions, things that are going to drive you long term, and then figuring out the type of environments you want to work in and what brings you energy. And then mirror that with what your highest level of contribution would be for the companies or the entities that you work for. And strategically, that lays out a cardinal direction, which really is your North Star. And that's what you use to guide your career decisions and to ensure that you're growing and developing to be able to achieve that.
We always say to people who are asking us that question, Chris, how do I figure out what I want to be, you know, when I grow up? We say, look, it also depends on where you are in your journey. If you're just starting out, you just graduated from school, get a job, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, both Grace and I had to get jobs because we had debt and we had to pay that debt off. So we say, get a job you think you're going to like, and then start paying attention to what you actually like in your work every day, what kind of office you're in or environment you're in, who you're working with, and begin to consciously kind of notate, you know, what's giving you energy and where are you excited about? And you may go through 3 or 4 initial jobs before you really lock in on that. I know people who didn't go back to graduate school till they were in their late 30s, early 40s, right? Some of them went back to med school, you know, right? Different things. It takes you however long it takes you to find that cardinal direction. But we do think it's the kind of thing that deserves attention and careful thinking versus I'm just going to let experiences happen. I'm going to take the recruiter's call. If I get the job, I get the job, et cetera. Then you're not in the driver's seat. And that career GPS analogy is intentional because we're saying you don't want to get in a car without knowing where you're going. So if you want to drive your own career, you actually have to pick the destination.
And I think also not settling. If you are very unhappy in your career, mm-hmm. don't think that it has to be this way. And both of you are great examples of incredible careers that you enjoy.
No, you picked that's another thing I think you really picked up on that we believe strongly in Career Forward, which is if you don't ask, you don't get. If you don't know what you want and have some strategic intent to where you're going in your career, you'll never get there. But also, if you're in a situation that could work, but there's something about the role that you're in that doesn't work for you, or the schedules that you've got, or whatever it is, the nature of the projects you're being given, ask for something different. Be prepared to back up that ask with facts, right? Why should you do something different? Why should they change your schedule? Why should you be able to flex? Whatever it is, you're going to have to be able to make your case. But if you don't ask, you'll never get it. And you may be in a job that's pretty close to your dream, if only, right? And it'd be a shame if you didn't at least try to get things to work for you.
Yeah, we also encourage people that our book is based in building professional equity. And through contribution and professional equity and continuous learning, opportunities can present themselves. But it's on you to figure out what are, even looking at the company you work for, what are the emerging trends? Is there areas of focus that you can continue to develop capability in to become even more valuable and to contribute? So it's really important that this professional equity is viewed as, you know, a give and take within the company, but it makes you very valuable. One of the concepts, for example, is growth stock. We like the analogy of a growth stock. And the reason is because if you think about a growth stock, take whatever company you want, I'll talk about Apple, for example, it fits a model. Those companies are expected to grow at a higher rate and generate more value than the average stock. And why? Because they're innovative, because they're investing proactively, and that their performance is consistent and contribution is high back to their shareholders. So if you think about that concept, and we encourage our reader to apply it to themselves, a person who has a growth stock mentality is always looking at how they can continue to contribute. How can they frame what they're doing today to be able to grow them for the position of tomorrow? And through those contributions, a lot of benefits come. Opportunity comes, compensation comes, professional growth comes. So, you know, it's like stay hungry and humble and continue to evolve, because those are the talents that are going to continue to have opportunity.
And at the foundation of all of it is really being the person who performs well above expectations for your role and being reliable and being the person that people know that if you said you will do it, you will actually do it. So let's talk a little bit more about it, because I see a lot of people talking about career and so on, but not really focusing on the performance side and what changes they need to make within themselves to become a high performer, to be able to be given the roles they want for themselves.
Yeah, we believe very strongly that part of being a growth stock that others ought to invest in is you've got to perform. Who would invest in a stock that wasn't rising, right? And the best way that you build what we call professional equity is to be good at what you're doing. In fact, when people ask me, how can I be you? Because that's very often the question we get. How can I be you? How can I get where you are? What both Grace and I will say back is, step one, be good at what you do. Because if you're good at what you do, you first of all build confidence. Second, you build expertise. Third, you build a reputation and you build your professional equity in your environment. And the people you work with, the people you work for, even the people outside your organization, they will be drawn to you because people want someone they know can perform. And there is really no getting past that. You know, we hear a lot nowadays about things like quiet quitting or lazy girl jobs, if you've heard that, or some of these other things. Those are approaches, but we would say they're very short term. Because you can do that for a while, but even in a less strategic approach to a career, if you're being, you know, kind of a lazy girl at the job, or you've kind of quietly checked out, it will be noticed. And as you said, if you don't keep moving ahead, you will fall behind. So that's why what we say right up front in Career Forward is, none of the rest of the advice that we're going to give you will work unless you're committed to performing. And that is a welcome message for some and a hard message for others, but we felt like we had to be honest.
Yes, it is incredibly important to say that, because some people may be thinking, okay, I will get this book and I will get all these tricks that I can implement and magically I will be very successful, but you have to have the foundation. You have to be the person that's actually exceptional at what they do, and then you can be given the opportunities. Let's say we have someone who up to now was not performing up to their potential. They're not really trying very hard because maybe they got disappointed earlier on in their career. There may be all kinds of explanations, but now they're listening to this session and they're thinking, this is my wake-up call. I want to be a high performer. What are some of the advice you could share on how can someone become a high performer?
I think, one of the tools we talk about in the book, and it's really meant for people who are, well, anybody who has aspiration and set aspirations. So including, you know, someone who wants to jumpstart their career, but is around this tool of SOAR. Okay. And we call it SOAR because what it does is it really allows you to do a check-in. We suggest you do this at least once a year and get feedback from your managers and your peers, et cetera. But it's really about taking assessment, having self-assessment on what are your strengths, where are the opportunities in your company and your industry and your organization and for yourself, where are the opportunities for you to grow or add skills, and have an honest conversation about what actions you can take to achieve that or build those capabilities. And then lastly, you know, are there hurdles or are there red flags that are going to prohibit you from achieving what you want to achieve? And it's good to recognize that because then you can action against those. So, you know, all of this speaks to self-awareness tied to aspiration. And how do you use tools to continue to make sure you're on pace and on point to where you're trying to achieve?
Yeah. And for instance, if you wanted to jumpstart your career and you were looking at that SOAR framework that Grace just outlined, when you do the strengths, it's very reassuring to remind yourself, hey, actually, I am good at some things. Okay. But be honest, what are the things where really, if I looked at myself versus my peers, I really feel like I stand out? Opportunities might include taking advantage of learning programs that your employer has. It might mean taking additional courses, you know, through extension classes or through online classes. But it means you're acknowledging that for you to grab those opportunities, you're going to have to build some new skills. And again, in an intentional way, you get to the A, which is the actions. Okay, so what am I committing in the next year for myself, for my career development that I will do? I'll go to one seminar. I will write one article. I will take on one project that isn't in my core area, but gives me a chance to get visibility. Whatever that is, commit it to yourself, because then you can come back at the end of the year and you look at SOAR again and you say, okay, how are my strengths, my opportunities, my actions, my red flags? How are they progressing? And how am I doing against the plan that I set out for myself?
Related to this discussion is an element of burnout or upcoming burnout. So for someone who feels that their tank is only half full and they are kind of halfway to burnout, but they want to elevate their career, what would be your recommendation?
You know, it's interesting because I think you hear a lot about work-life balance. And I think that is tied to people trying to avoid burnout or dealing with burnout. But we actually think that concept is really stale. And I don't think it's ever achieved. I think a lot of people have been talking about it for decades. I think our concept is a very different model. And it's really looking at a 360-degree life. And so what does that mean? That means you don't pit facets of your life against each other. You don't look at it like it has to be a win or a lose. What you do is you really think about incorporating the totality of who you are into your life. That means your career success means you're also having personal success in your life and satisfaction. And when you look at it holistically, there's a lot of tools you can take to really be intentional on the decisions and the choices you make along the journey. And that satisfaction allows you to avoid burnout and actually channel your energy into a really total satisfying life. So that's how we think about it. And I think that shift in mindset will allow you to apply some of the tools we talked about in the book that allows you to make the right choices along the way and really feel overall very satisfied.
And we also give some specific suggestions for how you can make sure you stay in balance across your 360 life. So for instance, and this is for anyone who has responsibilities outside of the office, right? Could be children, could be a partner, could be a parent. Don't try to do it all yourself. Ask for help. Sometimes that help is something help you have to pay for. You know what? Think of that as an investment in your own self and your development, and the ROI will come, right? Because a lot of times we might feel guilty about paying someone to do work we could do ourselves. you know, if you're really honest with yourself, you need more help than you need to get it, right? And so we talk about creating give and take, you know, so you might create a network of support where you're doing something to help out a friend, and then they take your kids for you at another time when you need it. You know, ask for help when you need help, and make sure that you invest and take care of your own health, because burnout, obviously, at its worst, will affect you both mentally and physically. And you're not good for your employer, and you're not good for your loved ones if you aren't taking care of yourself. So we absolutely endorse that notion of putting on your oxygen mask before you put on other people's, because the, you know, at the heart of this, you're supposed to enjoy the ride, not just feel like you got to the finish line of a career and fell over the line gasping, right? And we talk a lot about how we are at that stage of our life now where we look back and go, yeah, we really enjoyed our careers. And part of it was because we did seek to find this 360 degree balance across the facets of our life when we needed it.
Yeah, we often talk about an intentionality wheel, and it's a good way to think about the 360 model. So if you think about all the parts of your life, at any point in time, one of those elements comes and you intentionally are choosing on how to address it. And if you do that, you're in control of the decisions you're making. You feel at peace with the decisions you're making. And so those are things that really allow you to think about, my life encompasses all these aspects, and I'm making the decisions of when to choose and how to play. Now, sometimes that means your job is requiring you to go do something for your job, and that's necessary. You have responsibilities. You don't feel guilty about it. You do what you need to do. You accomplish what you need to accomplish. Other times, it's about taking a moment for a special ritual with your child. Like when my son was young, I would sometimes take him out for pancakes early in the morning on a weekday just to do something special with him and then drop him at school. It's whatever works for you to be able to intentionally carve out moments and time and be selective about what you need to take care of when you need to take care of it. But look at it holistically. It's not a trade-off, or it's not a compromise. It's a intentional decisioning.
Well, can I give one more example, Chris? You know, because we can make this concrete for people who are listening. We know, what are you guys talking about when you talk about different things will come up at the top of your priorities? So I was a senior partner at McKinsey. I'd been a senior partner already for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. My son was going into high school. I realized pretty quickly that this was another phase in his life when he needed me home more, just like when he was very little and I was on part-time. And I didn't expect that, right? I didn't expect that for a high schooler who's 16, 17, 18. But you don't know what friends they're hanging out with. You don't know whether they're getting, you know, the schoolwork done. You don't know whose house they're going to. You don't know whether they're going to get the college applications done unless you're around. And at McKinsey, I was traveling a lot because I served clients globally, everywhere. And I made the conscious decision to step off track from being a client serving partner to being what McKinsey called a staff or an administrative partner. And I supported our internal board, our client committee, for 3 years while my son got through the rest of high school. And it meant that I had a minimal travel schedule. It was a very predictable schedule. And it was probably the closest to a 9-to-5 that I ever had was probably those 3 years, although it was never 9-to-5. And then I went back on track and was a client serving partner again. And I would do that again in a heartbeat, because the opportunities that I had to then make sure that he stayed on track and we stayed close during a challenging phase of people's lives was priceless, right? But that was an intentional choice that I made versus quitting my job and saying, I can't work while my son's, you know, in high school, or I don't know, I suppose neglecting him, which was not an option. That's the kind of intentionality that Grace was talking about.
It sometimes doesn't have to be, you don't have to step off. You can step sideways and use your time. When my daughter was in high school, I knew that moving her would have been a problem. She had 3 more years. So I didn't go for, you know, the next level of chief procurement officer jobs out of state. I wasn't going to relocate her. But I used that time to expand my responsibilities in my current company, continue to network, and I ended up finding one in the geographical area I was living. And that led me to one of the biggest jobs I got afterwards. So it's not a stall. It can often be where you're intentionally building and continuing to build your professional equity and continuing to make decisions to where you feel good about it as a person and as a professional.
I love this example. So I think that as we were talking about high performance, and I was thinking about our audience, our listeners, and the feedback I hear from them, we have high performance in our audience. Everyone is incredibly driven and they work incredibly hard. And I think that another side of it that we need to touch on is it's not an issue with having motivation to be high performer, but there are certain elements that people are struggling with. They want to be better. They want to deliver better results. So one of the elements I hear as feedback is prioritizing time management, keeping all the responsibilities and not letting something drop. Do you have any advice on that? Maybe you had experienced it as an issue in your career, or you know someone who did, some of the tools that you found very helpful, because this is something that I very commonly hear from our listeners.
I think time management, ability to prioritize is so important that it ought to be something that employers actually teach employees, or that we all should learn in school. But it doesn't happen. There are really good tools and books out there, though, that I think you can get that help you. And figuring out your most important things and knowing what your most critical path items are is probably at the heart of all of them, right? Which is, it's really on you to know what's most important and what's most critical. And everything is not equally important, right? Beyond that, there are other tips, you know, that were helpful to me. So for instance, actually having a to-do list of things that you want to get done and how long it might take you to do each of them, so that when time frees up in your day, you actually know what you could do to fill in a 15-minute slot, a 30-minute slot, or whatever. That was one of the best tips I ever got. Another really good one was, don't get sucked all the way into email in the morning. Because first thing in the morning, you go through email, especially if you work in global companies like Grace and I did, and you find out that overnight, you know, the rest of the world was working and they've teed up a whole bunch of problems from you, but you had your own list of things that you were going to get done. You got to scan that, obviously, and you got to identify any that are really important. But if you end up every morning spending hours going through and resolving things on email, you're not in charge of your day and you're not actually driving the priorities that you need to drive. So those would be some of my tips. I don't know, Grace, what do you think?
You know, I think the way I used to think about it is, you know, like there's a plate and you have so much capacity on your plate. Okay. So you're going to think through how to use that capacity effectively. And that gets into the trade-offs. It gets into the priorities that Christiana talked about. It also gets into understanding what are your peak times. So if you're a morning person, you might get up and you might, you know, especially with global jobs, go and address the major issues. And then you might take time to drop your kids to school and then get back in the office. But you've got to figure out how to turn it on and turn it off like a light switch. When you come home and you're with your partner or with your kids, you have the discipline and the capacity to say, I'm going to turn it off now for a while and be present with them. So it's, to me, it was much more about toggling and maintaining high capacity, but deploying that capacity at the right time, at the right place, and knowing myself well enough that you would have methodologies to know or practices to know when to turn it off and then when to turn it back on. And that worked. But it is rooted in also looking, you know, at some very practical things. Look at what you spend your time on. You know, there's books written on this, but look at how many meetings you're in and is it productive? And if it isn't productive, you know, find your way to say, you know what, we don't need to do this for 2 hours, you know, and figure out how to have other methodologies that create more time in your day. In other words, use your time wisely and don't let people waste your time, but be where you need to be. And this is a skill that it doesn't matter what you do or where you do it, whether in academic or medical or business. If you want to be able to be successful, you've got to treat your capacity as a special factor in how you're able to accomplish and use it.
I would also just add one more thing, because I saw this a lot in consulting, especially amongst my fellow partners. And I see it with senior leaders in corporate environments. Whatever you're in or whatever you're doing or whatever discussion or meeting you're participating in, be there. Because if your focus is split, you're looking at your phone, you're looking at your email, you're trying to edit something while someone's talking to you or whatever, Multitasking is a fallacy. There's no such thing. You will take twice as long. You'll get half as much done. So wherever you are, be there and be in it and get to a good outcome and a good result and give it your focus and your time, because otherwise you're just going to end up wasting the time of the people around you. And that's frustrating for both of you.
And your own time, because you may miss some important things in the meeting. You're not building the relationship.
Go back.
If you made the time to be at the meeting, be at the meeting. I love this advice. I think related to all of this is the fact that people who are very driven and high performers, we tend to work really hard, very long hours, weekends, public holidays, and so on. And a challenge that I see is when you work that hard, your brain is kind of tired. And so you could have been more effective with your time if you gave yourself enough rest each week. What is your approach to rest?
I think rest is critical. I think, you know, it's not just about sleeping well. It's about finding activities that regenerate you. And that depends on the person. So for me, you know, I love exercise. You know, I like to work out. I like to be out in nature. For another person, it might be reading books, listening to music. Whatever it is, be very conscious that those are the regenerating activities. And that is what will allow you to be at your best and find time for those as well.
And I will tell you, I have what Grace just said is what I've heard from women at very, very senior levels, that they protect interests and hobbies and things that give them energy outside of their day-to-day job. So there's one woman CEO I know who is an amazing knitter. And when my son's baby was being born, this is the CEO of, and let's say, $80 billion company. She knit a baby hat for my grandchild and sent it to my son and daughter-in-law. And when they got it and they saw who it was from, they were floored, because your mental sense is, wow, that woman has no time, right? She's running this global enterprise. It's a massive company. It's hundreds of thousands of employees, whatever. But she knits. And she makes sure she has time to do that because it gives her energy, right? So, you know, I tell everyone, give yourself the permission to continue. It's back to our 360 life, to continue to have other facets in your life that will enrich your work. Your work will enrich your life. But if you assume you got to give something up because there just isn't time for it, go back and look at how you're spending your time, because you're probably not optimal.
And how much rest have you found you need to recharge?
I mean, let's just start with sleep. I absolutely believe I need at least 7 hours. I'm very cranky if I don't get enough sleep. So I'll start there. And I'd say for both me and Grace, if we don't get time to exercise, we also feel out of sorts and not ourselves. So, you know, if you add it all up, there's still plenty of time to get work done during the day, and plenty of time to have a life.
Well, the reason I ask this question, because I see so many people who are not resting and they need baby steps. They need to know, okay, it's a to-do item. I need to put on my to-do list that today, let's say for 2 hours, I need to go for a walk in nature. So I think examples of successful people like you really help people to integrate those helpful, healthy habits into their lives.
And I think, Chris, it might be a little bit harder now with so much of work happening virtually, to make sure that you do take that time, because it just kind of slides into every minute and every corner when you're one video call away from your work. And I, for instance, really appreciated when I was working at Nike. Nike has a big corporate campus and we would have walking meetings, right? And it was totally okay if it was a meeting where you didn't have to present something or you weren't looking at a piece of paper. So maybe a development conversation, you know, a mentoring conversation with someone, you know, you meet, you get a cup of coffee and you actually walk around the campus. It's so rejuvenating because you're outdoors, the sun is on you, you're talking to someone, you're moving your body. When you're home on a video screen, there isn't somebody else with you nudging you to get out and do that, right? And actually when you go walk, you're away from your laptop, so you feel like you're missing something. So I do think people, the next generations, will have to be more intentional about finding some of the things that Grace and I were more easily able to integrate. And it just comes back to, again, being conscious of it and being strategic.
Coming back to discussion about optimizing a career GPS, because I feel we need to go a little bit deeper into it for people to get better clarity. You talk about the importance of defining a specific location known as your cardinal direction. And you guys mentioned cardinal direction earlier today. So I think it's a good place for us to explain what does this term entail?
So I think the cardinal direction is really the concept of, you know, instead of going job to job to job and being like, oh, everything's fine, I'm doing this job, I'm doing the next job, is to stop and think about what is it you're trying to achieve in your career. And when you establish that, it becomes your cardinal direction. Now, what you have to realize is that life is fluid. Okay. So it's not like, you know, we were 21 said, I wanted to be the chief operation officer at PepsiCo and run global operations. It's not that definitive. But along the way, I knew what I wanted to achieve, and I set strategic goals that were much more long-term. And then you approach your career in a way like a GPS, where you're on the road and you understand when you're going to take a turn or make a choice. You're doing it intentionally. You're doing it thoughtfully and strategically. You're not just looking at the particular destination that you're in today. And that's the key, I think. And I do think that as we think about this next generation, it's really thinking ahead and being strategic. And with that comes all the things we talked about. If you're on your road to your cardinal direction, you're going to understand and make choices along the way. And the jobs you take and the type of work you do and the things that you need to learn and how you want to contribute are all going to be with that in mind.
I would just say on top of that, back to what I mentioned earlier around your first couple of jobs, using those as a learning lab and really as the proof of concept for the things that you really like, the people that you want to work with, and the kind of work you want to do. And just to give you an example from my side, because as Grace said, neither of us was born saying, hey, I want to be a chief executive. I want to be at the, you know, I want to be in the CXO office or whatever. I was the middle child of five. I was the second girl. Like, there's just nothing about, you know, me showing up in this world that would say, hey, that kid's going to end up being the president of something. But I took my first job in college, a real job in college, was an internship with the US government. Didn't like working for the government, did like working in a professional environment, did like working with smart people, did like doing analysis. So the next job I took after I graduated was in investment banking. I was working with smart people. I was in a professional environment. I was doing lots of analysis, but I hated the lifestyle. But again, I thought, okay, I like these things. So I got to business school. In business school, you have a chance to go to a lot of career talks from a lot of different companies. I went to everything and eventually took a summer job in consulting. Didn't like the firm I was with, did like the work. So you know what I mean? And so this is how it keeps refining. And then when I was in consulting, for the first couple of years, I worked in every industry sector you could think of. I did a healthcare study. I did a pulp and paper study. I did a banking study. I did retail. And I got to retail and I was like, these are my people. I love this industry. I love being around clothes. I love being around merchandise. And I began to create a retail practice on the West Coast of McKinsey, which had not existed before. So that's where you start to shape what happens. Because we talk in Career Forward about how you also have to create options for yourself, because the perfect job or the perfect opportunity isn't necessarily going to come to you with a bow on it, right? And you got to be ready. If it did, you got to be ready to take it. But if it doesn't, you got to take steps to create your own opportunity. And for me, that meant once I realized how much I liked the retail sector, I started working to build support to create a retail practice on the West Coast and get colleagues to join with me and develop client base and create the work. That was the part that I had to take on myself. But at that point, I knew. And if you had asked me at that point, hey, do you see yourself being the president running a retail business? I would have said yes, right? So that's the journey that I went on and how I continued to shape the cardinal direction, as Grace said, as my life and my circumstance developed.
We started our discussion today about finding the right career. And now you're giving this example about consulting. It reminded me that consulting is such an incredible way to test different spaces that potentially could be a good fit for you. and then select something that you really enjoy. I myself spent time in consulting, and I really enjoyed that part of being able to be on completely different studies and completely different industries and explore and see what you enjoy the most and how you can also learn from different industries and then bring it to the next study and so on. So thank you so much for this incredible discussion today. Were there some things that you wanted to discuss and they have not brought it up? Now will be a great time to talk about it.
Well, I think one thing we might mention is just where people can go to learn more about Career Forward.
Yes, I was going to ask it anyway, but let's talk about it as well.
Sure. We have a website, careerforwardbook.com. And the book is obviously available through all of the places that you would naturally go to get books. And we're also on LinkedIn. So we welcome you to look us up and learn more about everything that we've talked about so far today.
And then the last question from my side is, over the last few years, what were some aha moments, realizations that really changed the way you look at life or the way you look at business?
You want me to go, Grace? I'll give you my... I talk about this in the book too, Chris. Mine was when I had my son and I was a senior manager in consulting and I was back at work after only 11 weeks maternity leave. And I couldn't handle the long hours. And I just felt like I was coming up short everywhere at work, at home with my son. So I went into the office manager's office and I told him that I needed to quit. And he said to me, "Don't leave until you think about what it would take to make you stay." And that has been my mantra forever, ever since then, which is, if something isn't working for you, don't quit on it until you actually take the time to figure out what would make it right for you. And then ask for it. And if you get it, the reward is you're staying in a situation that is really working for you. If you don't get it, you leave with closure and understanding that this is not the right place for me. I'm going to go find and create some opportunity that's better. That was a game changer for me, truly.
I think, when I think about it, in terms of, there were several, but one that sticks in mind is when I left a very stable food company and I went to go work for an airline. Everybody thought I was crazy. And I did it not only to be the chief procurement officer there, but when I got there, the financial crisis had hit. And when it did, and I was a single mom with young children and, self-supporting, and our stock went down to the price of a latte. And I remember turning to my boss at the time and saying, "Our price is down to a stock of, price of a latte." And I realized that, it was a serious situation and that I could have made a move from a very stable company to a very volatile situation, not anticipating the financial crisis, that you could have been facing a situation of bankruptcy down the road. And, that was a moment where you really had to take stock and realize, you know what? It's going to be okay. I'm going to figure it out. And I know I've built capabilities and marketability. And if this goes south, I'm going to get another job and I'm going to continue my career path. And it taught me a moment of incredible resiliency. And I honestly never approached any of my employers with a sense of overdependency. I approached it with loyalty, appreciation, but not dependency. And so to me, that was a pivotal moment. And by the way, working those 3 years and seeing the airline continue to do well and survive and thrive and sell off was one of the best career years I had. And then I left and joined another large opportunity. So those are moments I think that just taught me, you know what, you can do this. As long as you have a career forward mindset, you build your capability, you're prudent in your decisions, you're going to be okay. You can handle it.
And this is such a good advice generally for relationship, not just even relationship with your employer, but generally relationship.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Christiana. All Thank right. you, Grace. So incredible to have you with us. Any final words you want to share?
Oh, just thank you for having us on. It's been a great conversation and we appreciate the thoughtful questions. Thank you.
Thank you everyone again for tuning in. Our guests today again have been Christiana Smith-Shee and Grace Puma. check out the book. It is called Career Forward, Strategies from Women Who Have Made It. And I'm sure you will not be able to argue with me. Both of those incredible women we had today on the podcast have made it in a big way. And if you want to strengthen your strategy skills, you can get the overall approach used in well-managed strategy studies. It is a free download. Go to firmsconsulting.com/overall approach. And I'll see you all next time.